Thank you all for spending lunch with me. I'm hoping that you're all around delicious food, and I will try not to put your appetite off on it. I love doing these sort of luncheon webinars because, to me, I see them as a really sort of more informal, formative chat, right? So I have a reputation for getting up and doing my Baptist preacher impression and keynotes and such, and this seems like it's a chance for a little bit more intimate environment. So I hope that you will give me some feedback as we go, make sure that things are going well, and if you have any questions, please ask them. And today I want to talk about the idea of the library as a platform. So this is a quote here. Let's see if I can get it right. Here we go. This is a quote that I've used actually in that atlas, and it generates, every so often generates a rather interesting discussion. I thought we'd start there. So I long intended that a room full of books is simply a closet, but that an empty room with a librarian in it is a library. You know, as a field, we've gone through all these sort of identity crises and had discussions about what we call ourselves and where we work and such. And there's always been this discussion. My favorite sort of line was that we were named after a building. What other profession was ever named after a building? I sort of say, well, you know, accountants actually were because it was a counting house. But that's not the point. I like the idea that I'm all into historical revisionism, that we can make history match what we want, whether it happened or not. So I'm perfectly willing to turn around and say that they named the building after us. I think that makes sense. Why not? But the point of this is that we're having a discussion about what do we do with our buildings, what is it, what's our infrastructure for, how does it match with our online environment. There's just a lot of change going on. There's a lot of transformation going on in all industries, the least of which is ours. I was just reading an article where a librarian said, you know, 5 years ago I was asked by a reporter, will libraries as an industry survive in the next 10 years? And he said, you know, I really wish I would have said, absolutely. Do you think yours will? Because the reporter was working for a daily paper that closed. So we're in an environment that's changing rapidly, and that leads to anxiety, it leads to transformation, and it leads to a real need, in my opinion, to think about what we're doing and why we're doing it. So today, rather than spend a lot of time talking about our role as a librarian and what's the nature of librarianship, I want to talk about the nature of the library. And I want to talk about what we do with that empty room. I want you to define the library for a moment as the infrastructure necessary for the librarian to do their work. So let's just work with that for a moment. And so we're all used to this being our infrastructure or some version of this, right? The physical infrastructure with our stacks and our shelves and our offices and our desks and our control systems and RFID systems and the physical nature of the library. And I think that this is an excellent and amazing piece of infrastructure that we have. But it's changing. We know it's changing all the time. We know that some of the changes going on is the idea of moving from quiet buildings with loud rooms to loud buildings with quiet rooms. Right? It used to be the Shushville, where people would come in and we'd have this area off to the side. If you were in public libraries, that's where you did story hour. If you were in academic libraries, that was a study carrel. But the idea was that it was primarily a quiet space because we assumed that people were coming in to use this infrastructure in a very specific way. And that is in quiet contemplation, in the idea of reading and synthesizing and working. And we saw it as a very individual environment. In fact, much of the infrastructure we have designed and much of our practice is designed around serving the individual. Right? Think about reference for a minute. When you do reference, the idea is that you do a reference interview that consists of a librarian and consists of a patron. And you have this one-on-one conversation. And so we have this idea that there is a person who comes in, patron, user, we can talk about the words in a while, and we serve them. And a lot of our infrastructure is built around that. But we know now that that's not necessarily what's going on and that it's changing. Right? We're moving from places of knowledge access to knowledge creation. This is Joan Fry Williams, one of my favorite people, had a great line that said libraries need to be less of grocery stores and more of kitchens. Right? So a grocery store is where you're going to prepare a meal, you go and you buy all the stuff you need and you do comparison shopping, and then in order to do the work, cooking the food, preparing the meal, you leave. And you do that somewhere else. You do that someplace much more intimate and so much more personal. You do that in your own kitchen. And what that's sort of a really interesting analogy, that we used to think of libraries as a place where you'd go and you would research and you'd find the materials and the books and the databases, and then you'd go somewhere, either virtually or physically, and you would do your work. You would read at home. You would write your paper. You would come up with your next great project. But a lot of emphasis now is on the idea that, no, when you come to this space, this is a space to do that work. And what that means is that we're beginning to look at the physical buildings, instead of this being the territory of the librarian, it's the territory of the community. I mean, even in this layout, you know, if we were to assign where things are, the what I use, members, the people coming in can't move around the shelves. We determine where that is, and that's our books and our collection and where we put them. And here's this area, and this is the staff area where we do cataloging and sorting and all that other stuff. And that really, this is a place for the community to come in and use our stuff. And what's happening, there's a theme throughout these bullets. And that theme is that we're understanding is that when people are coming in to use the library, they're coming in to learn. They're coming in to learn about themselves, their world, their work, their place in it. They're coming in to learn how to achieve things. They're coming in to learn about where they fit and what they think. I mean, oftentimes when I use that line, people say, oh, but what about fiction? Fiction is some of the most important learning that we do. We learn what we like. We learn about other worlds. We learn about possibilities. We learn about characters. We learn about ourselves, ultimately, where we are and what we can do. And we learn through technical manuals and online databases. But what we know about learning is that learning is ultimately a social activity. That learning happens through a process of conversation, of conversing with people who already know the content, people who are fellow learners to that process. We know that learning is actually pretty loud. We think of learning as a quiet activity, but even when you're sitting alone, you're oftentimes engaged in a conversation where you're going back and forth and talking about that topic. And that conversation is often expanded to your colleagues, your teachers, your friends, your neighbors, etc., and that our libraries need to support that. So when we talk about where our spaces are going, right, we begin to have questions like, for example, are we building the information commons? So huge initiatives in academic libraries, increasingly in public libraries and special libraries. We're building information commons. And what are we doing? Well, we bring the librarians together, we bring workspaces together, and we bring reading services and technology services, and we co-locate them together, and people are learning about it. And it becomes really interesting, this is a question we'll come back to, which is if you take this commons to its extreme, what's the difference between a learning commons or information commons in a library and a community center? You know, why is this still a library? Are digital services transforming in the same way our physical services are? Right? For years and decades now, we've been talking about the impact of digitization and technology. We've been talking about new systems and whether we should blog or social networking and what we should do with our catalogs and what do we do about digital items and what do we do about these digital collections. This is a question. I'm sorry. Are you seeing the where to and why slide? Just seeing.
I'm seeing it here.
Okay, good. Sorry about that. So, when we think about that's all happening in the digital world, and then we see in our physical spaces, they're becoming open, they're becoming flexible, they're becoming lots of meeting spaces. We're designing them, and I love this line. This was Corinne Hill, who's now the director of Chattanooga, Tennessee, their public library, said, we're designing spaces now where the collaboration happens in the middle, and the books are aligned along the outside, the edge of the wall, as art. And some people say, oh, great, just decoration? That's sort of... Well, that's not what art is, right? Art for centuries has been a place to provoke, a place to learn, a place to inspire. And so the idea is that we're meeting in the middle, person to person, and the conversation. And when we need inspiration, a little bit more additional information, provocation, we can just quickly reach out and bring in what we need to that central collaborative space. Well, if we're moving and transforming this digital way, and we're moving and transforming our physical ways, are they in some way linked? Is there a deeper reason for this shift? And so what I want to present, what I want to talk to you about, is the idea that what we have in the library, and when we think about the library's institution, is that we have a platform. And a platform is both technological and it's in physical space and all of this other stuff. So in computing, we talk about technology platforms. And what is a platform? Platforms are technology and content assets organized in an architecture to achieve some goal. Right? That's a big, fancy, not very useful definition. But what it really means is that we bring together a bunch of components. We organize them. We don't just throw them out. And we put them together in such a way that they function together towards a goal. And that goal is normally very broad. Right? And so you can think of this as a collection, for example. We bring together materials on different authors, different publishers, different formats, different sizes, and we put them together into a collection. Sort of the idea of an architecture. But now we have a collection, we also have a building, we also have an online catalog, we also have a digital repository. All these are brought together around some normally very broad goal. The question is, what's that goal? Well, right now, mostly that goal in libraries is distribution of content. Think about it. How much of what you do in terms of physical space and technological space is about broadcasting out or circulating content? And you say, oh, but Dave, we do lots of programming. We have children's hours. We have lectures. We have lots of things. And I ask you, who runs them? Right? Is this a library-controlled event where we, you know, think about what we're engaged in right now. You were welcome to come in. You're invited. You're muted. You're sitting out there. I was selected. You're hearing from me. This is a program. But it really is a distribution of content. It just happens to be an idiot in Syracuse who's speaking the content, but it's still a distribution of content. The question becomes, what happens if we change the goal of that platform? If we look at libraries as a platform, but we say our goal is not distribution or broadcast of content, it really is something fundamentally different. And I'm going to argue that when we do that, then physical spaces, digital spaces, all of this becomes nice and unified around a new goal. Where does that goal come from? Well, that goal ultimately comes from our mission. What is the mission of a librarian? What are we seeking to do? Right? Because that's what we're going to build a platform to do. Well, the mission of a librarian is to improve society through facilitating knowledge creation in the communities. Right? Really, as a librarian, you didn't get into this job so that you could check in and out books. At least I hope not. Right? As a librarian, we don't look at our end-all and be-all as we open the doors today. Right? We look at it as we have a broader service mission. We seek to be of service. We seek to improve the communities that we're in. When people ask us questions, we don't just answer because we get paid $10 a question, which would be fantastic. We do it so that people will learn. People will get a new perspective. People will find a job. People will have new opportunities. People will write their next book. People will understand what's going on. And as a community as a whole, we will improve. Right? We do it to increase the democratic processes within our communities. We do it so that students can make a more informed choice. We do it so faculty can do better science. We seek to make our communities better. And we do that in a very specific way, and that's around knowledge. Right? We're not priests. We don't seek to engage their spiritual awareness, even though many people think Mark is in fact a form of prayer. But that's not the point here. The point is that we're seeking to educate. We're seeking to expose people to a rich, diverse form of information. So if that's our mission, if our mission is this facilitation of knowledge, of helping people engage, understand, synthesize, retransmit, understand what's going on, then our platform needs to be much more than simply a distribution of content. It needs to be much less about inventory control and much more about idea spreading. We need to be much less worried about collection development and much more worried about connection development. We need to get people in touch with new ideas and new thoughts and help them synthesize it, make sense of it, rebroadcast it, bring in, create a community around it. And therefore, our technology, our physical platforms, our personnel structures should be around this more interactive way. So the goal for the platform of libraries is not the distribution of information, books, materials. It really is around community learning and innovation. That the goal of the library, what our platforms that we are building for, is community learning and innovation. And I define innovation as people developing new methods to improve a process. They may not dream them up from scratch. They may be adopting them from other places. But ultimately, we're having people think about, how can I do something better? Whether that something is how to knit better, whether that something is how to learn better, whether that something is how to vote better, whether that something is how to build a new machine or a new technology or a new business. But better, improve is still in there. So let me give you a few examples of using the library as a platform and how it changes when we move from this idea of we have a physical space and we have these digital things and we're doing all this stuff and we're getting the content in and out to let's build a unified way in which people can come together, learn, and improve. All right? So here are my examples for you. I'm going to walk you through these at some length. And then, like I say, I'm hoping that we have plenty of time for questions and comments afterwards. So the first is we worked with a company called Polaris. It's a library service, integrated library service system vendor here in New York. And they have a public access catalog and modules and all that stuff you would want. And what they began doing is they began saying, you know what other libraries do is they keep all these collections of local information on local organizations, right? So if you have questions about Health and Human Services or where to give blood or the Boys and Girls Club, they have information so they can point you to the right organizations. And their question was, can we integrate that into the catalog, right? And so we began working with them on a grant, which was an entrepreneurship grant, to say how can they build what they called community profiles in so that when you do a search on, you know, parenting, not only do you get books and materials on it, but you may get pointers to these organizations that are there to help on that topic. And so it became a relatively simple matter where we somehow created this system where they could create a mark-like record of an organization. So they could go in and say, all right, you are the Boys and Girls Club. This is your name. This is where you are. This is your contact information. They could add things like events that were going on. And as we were working through this, we said, you know, particularly when it comes to events, it's going to be hard to keep that up to date because these aren't just like books that you put on a shelf and leave them. You've got to come back and maintain these records on a pretty regular basis. And really, the people who have the strongest interest in doing this is not the librarians, but the community organizations themselves. So can we make it so that the community organizations can build their own profiles within the system? So now, once again, you put in after-school activities, you get books, materials, magazines, and the Boys and Girls Club. That information from the Boys and Girls Club is coming directly from the Boys and Girls Club. They have what events are coming on, etc. Now, the other part of this is, what's in it for these organizations? Well, a lot of organizations are looking to get out the word that they do it, particularly in the public area. They found lots of county agencies that want to get out more information, and now they can do it through the library. But the other thing is we found lots of these little itty-bitty organizations that were very good and very useful but had very little infrastructure on their own. My favorite is a group called Lukey Soul Foundation, which is a small family foundation formed after the untimely death of their son. And what they did was every year they would have a golf outing and they would take the proceeds of this golf outing and they would give it to the local children's hospital. But it was the mom and dad running this. And it was all they could do with their regular full-time jobs to organize the golfing event. They had no idea how to do posters and websites and all this other stuff. And so what we were looking at is, well, they could create a profile in the system. And not only would people within the library system, the catalog, be able to find it, but we can make landing pages for them as well, which is, they can make a website simply by entering their data into the library catalog. And now there are plenty of free places on the web to do that, but this is a place that was trusted, was local, would help them through that process, and everything they needed on it. Now the other thing is for larger organizations such as Boys and Girls Club, the Red Cross for blood donation, even large, we have a incubator space for new businesses downtown, they said we could take that information and we could embed it back into our own website. So the idea was that they could create what we were calling the virtual branch, where right on their website they could have library resources such as the million-dollar databases and competitive databases and SEC filings. They could have books and materials on things like that so that as people found them, they were using library resources embedded within their own organization. Now it gets even more interesting because what we're moving from is the catalog as an inventory control, this is the stuff we have, to suddenly the catalog becoming a community resource for the community to host and retrieve their own information in their own context. And so what happened was we had a doctoral student here at Syracuse University who said, you know, if you're going to get all this community information, if you're going to get all this event information, it works perfectly with what I wanted to do, which was he wrote an iPad app. And he had these iPads installed on buses throughout the city. And what you could do is through this app, you could press a button. It would say, all right, you are here, because the iPad knows where it is. It says within the local area, you've got, yes, this many libraries, but you've got these events going on. And where were those events coming from? It was pulling directly from the catalog and the information these community organizations were putting into it so that they could share it back out. Now, think about that example for a minute. The person on the bus who says, what's going on near me? That app, the iPad app, the bus itself, all of that had nothing to do with the library. Library didn't pay a dime for it. Library wasn't in control of it. Library didn't have to maintain it. The data that that app is bringing up from these community organizations, the library didn't control it. The library doesn't create it. The library didn't create it. Didn't have to put it all in. The community organizations did that. But that entire system was completely unavailable. You could not create that system without the library being part of it. Because the library, through its catalog, held that information there. The library was a community platform where the information came from the community, the information was used by the community, it all flowed through the library, but the library was a way to make it happen, not someone who had to control every part and piece of that process. That's the difference here, is that when you begin to think of it as a platform, and a platform for the library to participate, work in, play, and try, versus the library has to be something where we create every program, we own every piece of content, and we lend it out, radically changes things. It allows you to move out of this stifling system where only innovation can come within the library, that only the resources we can afford through our librarians and our book budgets and such are the things that we can provide the community. Suddenly we become like the roads. You still have to pave the roads and pay for the roads and maintain the roads, but what goes on top of those roads, that infrastructure, is amazing in an infinite variety that can happen. We need to move out of this idea that the only thing that the library can do is something that librarians create to. Librarians create a platform where amazing things can happen. And rather than having this debate about are libraries essential services like the fire department or recreational services like the park, you say, hey, we're the roads. Right? The fire department can't do its job without us. The recreational department can't do its job without us because we're providing the infrastructure to allow that information to pass and move together. I want to just take this one step further, and this is primarily for the academic librarians in the crowd, but not completely. So we look at a catalog, and what a catalog traditionally gets used for is as people coming to the catalog and they want to find a book. Now, we've been really good, right? So they can find a book or a magazine or a podcast or lots of information, or increasingly with this idea of community profiles, they can find local organizations and individuals. But let's think about for a minute, instead of thinking the catalog is this inventory system, that is a system for librarians to use to control where they find stuff and what their collection is, let's think if we could rethink about the catalog as a platform. Now, this platform still contains content, right? Our digital content, for example. It still contains our bibliographic data. So we have in there, we have our MARC records and the URLs and links we put in. And now, profiles of community organizations and the events that they're hosting. Right? So we've already talked about once we have this in the catalog, we can do things like generate a community calendar. One of the things that we found here in Syracuse was that the arts organizations, and there were many of them, wanted to coordinate. They wanted to be able to create an arts calendar, but they didn't have the tools to do it. Well, it's right here. The library has that infrastructure to do it. Come use us. We've talked about through profiles being able to create simple community presence. In an academic setting, this might be the web page of a professor or an academic department listing or the contact list for faculty expertise. And we talked about how all of this information can become a virtual branch that's embedded on other people's platforms. As an aside, when Corinne was down in Dallas, one of the ideas she came up with, which unfortunately didn't work out for many reasons, was she wanted to build a branch library at the airport. And so what was interesting is that Dallas has two airports, Dallas-Fort Worth, which is the international airport, and then Love Field, which is the local sort of southwest hub. And what she said is, you know, we're not going to go put a librarian out there. We're not going to put a collection out there. What we're going to do is we're going to pay for the Wi-Fi. It's going to be free Wi-Fi for the entire airport. In fact, the cost of it was going to cost less than putting up a billboard saying, come to the library. That's what they were going to do. And so when you were coming through Love Field, local resident or not, you popped up your computer. It says, you're in the library, and you can get anywhere you want on the net, plus here are other resources. That's the idea that the library is a platform. They have Wi-Fi. They have this infrastructure. Now she's in Chattanooga. They put this gigabit fiber, this massive fiber connection with great bandwidth throughout the city. And they're all going, what do we do with it? And the city turned to the library and said, please put some content on here. And the library, rather than saying, okay, well, we'll find some videos that we're allowed to stream, said, no problem. And they began hosting content creation sessions. They had artists in residence that would create materials and information. They had people come in and create their own personal histories and remix videos and create all this. And they created this as a content system that could go now throughout the entire city. That's a platform discussion. But let's take this one step further, which is one of the events that we can put in here is a course. Right? I'm going to offer a course on X, Y, or Z. Well, what is a course? If you think about it, a course is an event. Yes, it's going to happen at a given time or place. But it's also a profile. Well, who's going to be in the course? Who's going to teach the course? Who's the instructor? It also is a set of links to content. Well, here are the readings. Here are the things I want you to watch, including bibliographic data and links. Well, wait a minute. If we have a course that more or less fits very nicely within the library catalog, that's pretty much what we need with some additional tools to build a learning management system. So one of the things that I'm pushing these days is as academic libraries have been looking around, universities and colleges around the world are desperately trying to figure out how to be online. What are their online education experience? And so they go out and they find that there are some open source examples such as Moodle and Sakai, or they find software like Blackboard where they can buy it, and none of them fit really well. And then when they buy one, they build up this whole separate infrastructure around events, profiles, content, and data, and then invite the library to maybe have a link in it. But why are they building a separate technology infrastructure with it sitting right in the library is a massive technology infrastructure for distribution that already knows who our faculty and students are and already has the content and links to the materials and frankly is a better place for remembering this course content over time and can handle all the copyright issues. Why aren't we taking our catalogs and transforming them into learning management systems when we have these pieces in place and we become the core of our university's online initiatives? Now, that's the online environment, but what prevents us from then doing that, say, the public environment or the school environment? In the public environment, we have lots of expertise in the city where people are willing to share and teach courses, so we can create this sort of open university or open school, a public school and the public library, where people come in and teach different things using this infrastructure. This is a platform discussion, and it fits perfectly into the notion of a library because it's about that improving society and facilitating conversations, and it's about the idea that here's a technology platform that we can use. But let me show you some non-technology examples of a platform. At the North Onondaga Public Library, in the Cicero Library, they built a community garden. What happened was the community came and said, several community members and said, we have interest in gardening and we don't know where to start and how can we do this? And rather than simply saying, here's the materials and here's a book on it, they said, we've got a lot of land around us. Why don't we just build a garden? And so for the time of the public services librarian and a hose, they created plots of land. You can see there, and families and individuals would come and maintain their sort of check out a plot, and they would come and be able to garden. And they would meet on a regular basis and talk about what they were doing and talk about what worked and what didn't and help maintain each other. And what's interesting is when tomato season rolls along and they had way too many tomatoes, they began talking about local sourcing of food and food pantries and how they could build it out into the community. Now, one could say, what does gardening have to do with libraries? But what you're seeing here is that you had a community interest, an aspiration to improve, a gap in their knowledge that the library helped fill, not with materials, but with the very physical plant that they had. Bringing in expertise, channeling expertise, connecting people, they became a physical, in this case, garden, platform for a community to improve and try new things. In Eureka, Illinois. Eureka, Illinois is a really small town in central southern Illinois. And Eureka has, a main street and has a public library. And what happened was one day, Chef Katie, she's the one in the apron, came to the director of the library. She's sitting next to her with the check. We'll get to that in a second. And said, there's not enough places to have lunch in this town. I'm a chef who just moved into the town, and I would love to figure out a way that I could set up a food cart and all this other stuff. And rather than, once again, the librarian saying, well, here's a book on the food service industry, or here's a business model, or you're welcome to read about it over here, they said, you see that corner? Every Tuesday it's yours. Take that corner and serve lunch from there. She already had, she had a commercial kitchen she could prepare it in, so it was all done on the up and up. And that Tuesday turned into Tuesday and Thursday and turned into more and turned into a catering business. And so what happened was, here was someone seeking to start a business. And the platform that the library could provide was a very physical platform, which was its physical space. Its physical space, and at the same time, if she had additional questions about how do I get licensing and what about the idea of accounting and such, the library could link them up too. But what happened was the library was there to make it happen, not simply to read about it or document it afterwards. The check that's being exchanged, by the way, is from the Rural Development Corporation, who saw this as a great model and wanted to support Katie and build this out in many other environments. Now, once again, here in Central New York, we have something called a Fab Lab at Fayetteville Free Library. Fabulous lab. And it's noted because it's one of the first makerspaces, the first makerspaces in public libraries. But the story I want to tell is not about the 3D printer and all that fun stuff. It's actually about what happened when they started having workshops. What happened was, the example that they had was a bristlebot session. And what a bristlebot is if you take a toothbrush and you cut off the top, the bristles, and you attach it to an old pager vibrating motor and a watch battery, it will just sort of, you know, bounce along the table. And you can put them in lanes and get races. And so the librarians prepared this. They got all the toothbrushes they could. They got watch batteries, and they started the session. And as they started the session, what happens was they found out the watch batteries last for about a minute before they wear out. And the kids were getting sort of, you know, well, what about this? And the parents were like, well, we didn't get a bristle and whatever. And the librarians were getting more and more and more flustered. They began saying, oh, no, this isn't working. They weren't in control and it wasn't happening. Now, while they were trying to figure out what to do, all the kids started looking at, well, do you have any duct tape? And I said, sure. So the kids started taking full toothbrushes, duct taping them together. They found AA batteries, and they wired them together. And so now instead of building bristlebot, they were building bristle bat cars, and they were building bristle tanks. And what happened with the librarians, sort of this light went off in their head that said, wait a minute, what's happening here is we created this interesting experiment and environment. But when we stopped trying to control it, particularly when we weren't controlling it successfully, and we let the participants, the community, come in and control it, we're going to build this, we're going to try this, we're going to do this, it got much better. That instead of thinking of the program as a way of us disseminating interesting things to do with toothbrushes, what happens is they were allowing experimentation to happen. Because the hackerspace, the makerspace, is all about people coming and creating. And it took them that sort of sitting there seeing it happen to realize you don't tell people how to be innovative and creative. You create environments in which they can be creative and innovative. The picture there is my son. And my nine-year-old, decided that for his science fair project, he was going to build the library of the future. Right? So I raise nerds. I admit it completely. And so what happened is we sat down with Lauren Britton, who helped put the 3D printer together and such, and we learned about 3D printing. He said, I want to build the library of the future. So he started drawing it. And then his 12-year-old said, what you doing? And he said, I'm building a library of the future. And the 12-year-old said, that's really cool. Let's go build it in Minecraft. Now, Minecraft is amazingly popular, sort of Legos in space. It's a online game, all available through the web, where people can go and build their own environments. And so they actually took their drawings and started building the library of the future. And then after they got the 3D example, they said, oh, let's find some software. And they exported that model creation into something that they could then take to the library and print it out in 3D. Now, what was interesting is as they were learning about the 3D printer and doing this, and the librarians were going, oh, that's cool. Now we know how to do that, and we can share that with the rest of the community who wants to try it. They were talking about, well, we're going to have a workshop next weekend. Oh, what's going to be at the workshop? Well, we're going to have the 3D printer, and we're also going to have, you know, build duct tape creations if I can find anyone to do duct tape creations. My 12-year-old, within 10 seconds, had his phone out, was showing them all his duct tape creations, which were all weapons. So clearly I raised nerds and violent nerds. But anyway, and without missing a heartbeat, Lauren looked at him and said, great, you can teach it. And he did. The next week he came in and he taught how to build duct tape creations. And as we're driving home, he goes, that was the best day at the library ever. And it was the best day not because he got shown something amazing and not because he was able to check something out, not because there was a 3D printer there. It was because he was important. because he had a voice, because he was able to demonstrate his own expertise. And so the Fab Lab became a platform not just to do things, but to build self-confidence and to build this sort of sense of self-worth. Last example, the Dallas Public Library. Dallas Public Library is the largest physical plant central library in the country, public library. So one of these concrete things. And there was an attempt to say, well, what are we going to do with it? And they said, you know, how are we going to get sort of more entrepreneurial? We need to build economic development, entrepreneurship. How can we do that? And rather than, once again, thinking about what programs they can offer and what speeches they could give, they say, you know, once again, we're a platform to let great things happen. In this case, a physical platform. And they looked at their business and industry collection, and they were able to shrink it to half of one of these massive floors. And then they cleared out half. They put workspaces and whiteboards and monitors. And the idea was they then invited anyone within sort of central Dallas to come who wanted to start a business and say, start it here. We're a place to do it. And then what I think is even cooler, the plan was to say, you know, once we get that going, I'm going to take my senior staff and I'm going to co-locate them. So that as they're thinking about new ways that the library can do its work and think about the library, they're going to be doing it in an atmosphere where people are being innovative and entrepreneurial. And we're going to sort of model for us how to do that. Now, all of these are examples of the library as a platform, whether that's technology platform, whether that's physical platform, whether that's just the idea of providing a basis for community innovation, not providing the innovation, not providing the expertise that is the innovation, but providing that platform to allow innovation to occur. And it's and some people then ask, well, what's the difference between that, say, a community center? I could do gardening at the community center. I could do gardening, you know, anywhere, my home. I could do this makerspace, doesn't have to be in a library. Why is that a library, Dave? What you're really saying is take your physical libraries and take your systems and throw out the library part, just let people come in and do what they please. And that's not what I'm saying. The reason that this is a library, not a community center or any of these other spaces, is that that librarian is still there. It's still the infrastructure of the librarian to do what they do. And what do? They improve society through facilitating knowledge creation in their communities. So they do their mission. This is not just an empty room or a room with computers in it or a room with a 3D printer. It's a room with a mission. And that mission is, how do we move ahead? How do we do this through knowledge? How do we learn more about this? And we do it through our means of facilitation. We do it with access, not only access to materials and technology, but people. Bringing together the right people, bringing together the right books, bringing together the right technology, bringing together the resources that we have learned over several millennia of doing this. And ultimately, it's a space infused with our values around privacy, around openness and transparency, around intellectual honesty. These values permeate that environment so that we are trying to serve the entire community. We try and build a commons. We don't just try and build very specialized technology that only a few people can do. But in this, what we're doing is we're changing the focus on the infrastructure to allow librarians to do their job to an infrastructure that allows the community to come up with whole new views of the world. That's the transition that we're talking about. A transition from information dissemination to a platform of innovation and learning. So what are some of the implications? Well, first, in scholarly publishing, we built institutional repositories where we said, oh, our job is information dissemination. We'll get the information, the articles, the documents, and we'll put them in our system and allow people to get at it. And no one came. Well, of course no one came. The whole idea behind doing a scholarly communication is to communicate. And that means building a commons, connecting to people in other institutions, other disciplines, other walks of life. We need to build not institutional repositories, but network repositories, open access journals that bring people from multiple institutions together around disciplinary lines and oftentimes spanning those disciplinary lines. The role of the librarian changes from acquisition to curation. Acquisition is where we build our own collection to lend things out to, this information is coming from our book budget, it's coming from individuals, it's coming from visitors, it's coming all over the place. And our job is to curate it in such a way that it makes sense, it's findable, it's accessible, and it's useful to that innovation process. Moving from collection development, how do we build a collection of our stuff we can lend out, to connection development. How can we find interesting interrelations in this community we never thought of before? Because your community is your collection.
And it's a much richer collection than you can buy through Baker & Taylor. It's a much richer collection than you can buy by surfing Amazon. It's a collection in the public sphere that consists of newborns and people struggling through fourth grade and new mothers and new fathers and seniors who have 30 years left after their retirement to make an impact. In a university setting, it's professors and students and graduate students and people who aren't on the tenure track who are trying to literally understand how the universe works. In a school, it's teachers and students and administrators coming together to figure out what is the core of knowledge that we need to bring forward. And it's also important to understand that size does not matter in this. That in fact, rural libraries are actually really well positioned to move to this platform-like attitude because you know the connections better than in many large urban settings. That in large urban settings, you can build multiple communities together. Our buildings matter. Our services matter. But they don't matter on their own. And we do not determine their values as librarians. That's a job for the community. It is only in the advancement of those that we serve that we find our true impact. It is only in the potential realized that we can measure our contribution. Our buildings, our books, our services, our catalogs must not be channels of assistance, but rather part of a powerful platform that enables our communities to succeed. This platform is our infrastructure, but it is also the infrastructure of the community. It is co-owned by that community. We have a voice in it, and the community has a voice in it. And rather than thinking of ourselves as a repository or a collection that the community can use that will serve the community, but rather think of it as a cauldron to unleash the community upon the rest of the world, that's when librarianship becomes fascinating and interesting. This whole thing of why you became a librarian, I don't think it was the idea of maintaining a book museum. It was to help and serve. It was to find new possibilities that you never saw before. Every librarian that I know has a story that they hold dear to their heart. Every librarian of any worth that I know has that story where they made a difference, where they helped someone not just discover their next new book, but discover the book that changed their perspective on the world. That librarian that helped someone start a business, that librarian who gave someone the respect they needed when they were unemployed, and that respect became life-saving that they could change their life by going back to school or finding the next job. That moment when they helped save a battered woman from an abusive relationship. Those are amazingly powerful stories. And they're stories where we help the community succeed not by what was on our shelves, but by our own connections. Those stories never start with, "and I saw someone take the book that I had shelved." They always start with, "I met, I talked, I worked with. I understood. I listened." They're human connections. This platform that I talk about, technology, is technology and physical different. It's all about a human connection. Whether that human connection happens in physical space, whether it happens inside the library, outside the library, online, we become the instrument of building this platform. And we are enmeshed in this platform. And that infrastructure that we build, that infrastructure is more valuable than whatever budget we have for collecting materials. It is more useful and potentially impactful than we've ever had before. It allows our communities not simply to solve their problems, but to reach for their dreams. We are an aspirational organization that has greater relevance than ever before. Whether we're in a building or whether outside of a building, whether we have a librarian tag or not, we are the instrument of community improvement. That's essential. That's where we need to be. We need to have our physical spaces aligned, our digital spaces aligned, our human resource spaces aligned around that singular goal. Societal improvement, community improvement, and we do it through knowledge, and we do it through work, and we do it through connections. Build a platform for innovation. Be a platform for innovation. That's what ultimately we're looking to do.